This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Wednesday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
It is Wednesday. Happy hump day, Hunter.
And we're back on the air.
I know. Okay.
Say.
Real quick before we dive in with our first guest, I know what happened, but I don't really because it's all technical stuff. So explain a little bit about what happened.
So, I mean, pretty much it was an unplanned power surge.
Oh, no, the worst kind.
That's right. I don't know how you plan for a power surge.
I know.
But, of course, it managed to fry a few components within our system. And unfortunately, like we talked about online earlier this week, you can't just go down to your local Radio Shack and get replacement parts. So between having the techs out there working at it, trying to figure out ways to maybe bypass stuff, waiting on parts to be delivered, they were finally able to get us up yesterday afternoon. And they're still tinkering with things. They're still working on stuff to make it even better. But we have to send a heartfelt thank you out to all of our listeners that contacted us over the last few days and let us know, ask what was going on. I know a lot of people were worried that we were down for good, and that is not the case.
Absolutely not. No way, no how. Yes. And thank you to our sponsors, to everybody who, and those who remained with us and listening online. John, who was out there, major kudos to John for figuring all of this stuff out. What a rock star. So yeah, we're back. So it's awesome. It feels good.
Yeah, it's nice to be back on the air.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. All right, we're going to jump right in. Joining us in the third chair today is Manny Martinez. He is a candidate for Salem City Councilor Ward 2. Manny, great to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to be on your show.
Yeah, it's great to have you as well. So what is it now? We're at the end of March. Holy cow. Primary is May 19th?
Correct.
Okay, so that's coming up. Again, we always talk about this. Salem City Council race is mayoral race. It's decided then. Nonpartisan race, so you don't have to be, registered this or that. If you're in Ward 2, you're going to be on their ballot. So let's, it's been a little bit since we've had you on, so let's reintroduce Manny Martinez.
Okay, so I'm Manny Martinez, running for Salem City Council Ward 2. I'm 41 years old, small business owner and educator. I teach guitar at Linfield University and at a local private school. And I have my own private business teaching private guitar lessons to like 40 to 50 private students. And also have a live jazz quartet that does performances around town. So I basically earn my living as a musician and as an educator primarily, and I have been showing up to Salem City Council as of late, and I started testifying towards the end of the summer and started running my big fat mouth, and that's what landed me as a candidate for City Council Ward 2. And my main issue is the homelessness emergency. And I've learned so much in this process, and I genuinely believe that if we make this our number one priority, that we can have a very, very drastic change for the better.
So you've been following what's going on. Obviously, you live in Salem, so you see what's going on in Salem every day. Anybody who's out and about can see it. So what prompted you to go that first time to testify?
A friend of mine encouraged me because I was told that the council meetings had become so one-sided, and there's basically just a small group that has been able to control the narrative when it comes to the homelessness crisis for years now. And basically anyone that dared to say anything about it would be labeled as unkind or lacking compassion and just shut down and bullied into silence or shamed into silence. And I had just had enough of it because there's so many different aspects of it, but one in particular involves addiction, of which I know a lot about. I'm a recovering alcoholic coming up on 7 years of sobriety, and I'm an extreme case. I know a lot about addiction, and there is an element of addiction when it comes to the homelessness crisis. And I always make sure to point this out, and that is that I'm not saying that all homeless or unsheltered people are drug addicts or alcoholics. Mm-hmm. I've never said that. I always point out that there are a lot of different levels and different situations. You've got the single mom escaping her abuser. You've got the elderly grandma that has nowhere else to go. You do have people who just come on some kind of economic hardship, whether it's a medical emergency or they lose their job. There are people that are out there for all kinds of reasons, and we can feel empathy and compassion and want to help. And for those people that fall into that category, they generally will cooperate and take the services that are offered to them. They will be grateful for those services, and everyone is for that for the most part. Yeah. But there is an element of the unsheltered community that suffers from addiction and mental health that does not cooperate. And the question is, what do you do with the people that refuse to cooperate? And that's the question that I'm asking that has kind of blown this conversation open. And I refuse to be bullied or shamed into silence. We have to address that part of the population in order to solve this problem.
Well, I just sit here and go with Oregon laws and policies, aka legalizing drugs, fully allowing open air drug use and all of these things. That portion of the homeless population surged in the last 5 years to points that now that is the vast majority of them. And like you said, the single mother, whether it's an economic reason, whatever, I've always seen, you know, when I've seen those and encountered those, they're always interested in help and finding help and getting them and their children or just themselves off the streets and out of that situation. They're not there by choice. But a lot of these people, there's one here locally that both Jeff and I have had conversations with who has no desire to do anything but sleep in doorways or in a tent.
Yeah. And the other thing that I point out when people bring up the element of the drugs being legalized is that just because the drug use was legalized doesn't mean that all the associated behaviors afterwards are legalized. Okay. So when it comes to when it comes to the illegal camping or defecating on the streets or just the harassing kind of behavior, I get so many different stories from people, and people are afraid to voice this stuff publicly because of the abuse that you get for daring to say anything out loud. I'm happy to say that as a result of my campaign, more and more people are coming forward. And the people, it's a small group in my opposition that has managed to control the narrative for so long. They're starting to realize that they're not going to be able to get away with this silencing anymore. They're having to finally address the issue and have conversations about accountability and law enforcement. Again, I'm not talking about the single mom escaping the abuser.
Sure.
Not talking about the elderly grandma. Mm-hmm. When I talk about this, I do it in a very multifaceted way, but there is an element of my opposition that will hear everything that I have to say and then boil it down to, oh, he just wants to criminalize homelessness. And that is just a lie. It's not, I've never said that. And it's not practical either. There's not enough jail space. It's too expensive to do, and it's not what I would want to do. But you have to address the element of people that refuse to cooperate. And there has to be a law enforcement element of that. And when it comes to certain elements of the unsheltered community, and I talk about wanting to make the number one priority more shelter space so that there is somewhere for everyone to go. But then the opposition will say, like, well, what if they don't want to go because the shelter has rules? I'm like, now you're having a different conversation. It's like, are we going to assume that this population is not going to have to follow any rules at all ever? Like, we all have to follow rules. And it actually, I think it is more degrading to assume that this is a population that can't or shouldn't have to follow rules. Like, learning how to follow rules is part of the recovery process. So by not having them follow any rules and just assuming that they're not capable of living any other way actually robs them from the opportunity to be able to recover and turn their lives around and get well.
That's interesting that you say that. We've had those conversations over the years as well. And then you talk about sort of the housing first model. And so you said there was a meeting you saw. What's been your frustration sort of watching city council, how they've been dealing with it up until now? You said you've kind of broken that open, made it okay, given permission for people to speak about it. Because one of the frustrations is if you can't name the problem, you certainly can't solve it. So you've deciding to run for city council, you want to be representing Ward 2. What are you going to do differently than the current makeup of the council has been? It's been sort of the standard operating procedure for a while.
Yeah, I mean, the last several meetings for months now, they barely even talk about this issue. So how about as something different that I would do versus my opponent, let's say, it's like, I'm going to bring this up at every single meeting, no matter what they're talking about. I don't understand how this is not issue number 1A on every single city council meeting. The city of Salem has done polling on this. The people of Salem have made it abundantly clear, like 41% say that homelessness is the number one issue. And then 19% say that public safety is the next most important issue. And there's a lot of overlap between those two things. So with that being said, how is it that this is not the number one topic of discussion at these city council meetings? And I see one meeting after another where they're talking about a bunch of different things. And granted, it's important, but they barely even address this issue. I can't remember the last time that they talked about Wallace Marine Park in city council. And I can remember a meeting not too long ago where they spent like 3 hours talking about whether or not they should cut the grass in Bush Park. And meanwhile, I'm thinking there's hundreds of people living in Wallace Marine Park and sex trafficking and horrible crimes and people dying. And they're spending their hour after hour after hour about whether or not to cut the grass. It's like their priorities are completely upside down. So we're not going to be able to get anywhere on this issue unless we have this as the top priority. And that's what the people of Salem are demanding. So my opponent seems like a nice enough lady. I've got nothing against her personally, but if I was in one of those seats, especially with her as a council president, like, why is this not the number one issue at every single one of these council meetings? And then you can start to dissect about housing first and all the different policies, but they're not even talking about it at all, hardly.
Wow. Let's take a break. We'll come back and dig a little bit deeper into this, Manny. I want to talk about, you know, kind of what you're hearing from voters. We got the poll numbers, but I want to hear what you're hearing on the ground as well. And then why, you know, for representing Ward 2, why you're different. You've kind of dug into it, why you're different than your opponent. But we'll dig a little deeper into that. Again, we're talking to Manny Martinez. He's a candidate for Salem City Council Ward 2. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by the Perlin Mill and Color Tile of Salem.
All righty. Welcome back, everybody. We are wrapping up our conversation today with Manny Martinez, who is running to represent Ward 2 on the Salem City Council. Ward 2 is downtown. Kind of give us an idea of where Ward 2 is.
Yeah, it's basically like South Central. You get like the bottom half of downtown going into South Salem and out towards the east as well. So like a central chunk.
Yeah. Okay. So you're out now. Right now, frankly, elections are won on the doorstep.
Indeed.
That is how you win it. People get to know your name, you raise money, whatever, but you got to go out and you got to talk to voters. So, you know, you've said that you've kind of like cracked this kind of taken the lockbox off this issue where people can talk about it. What are you hearing from voters?
Well, it's a beautiful thing to finally be able to talk about this out loud. You have to be able to talk about it. Step one of the recovery process is admitting that you have a problem, right? So you have to look in the mirror and say, we have a problem. What are we going to do about it? And the interesting thing is that my ward is +6 Democrat. So I have a lot of liberal people in my neighborhood. And what I'm seeing is that there are a lot of people on the left, a lot of Democrats that actually agree with me on this issue. And the funny thing is, too, is that when people actually hear what I have to say, there's not a lot of pushback, because I actually can make the case that I'm fighting the hardest of anyone that's on council or running for council to actually help the people out in the streets. I'm making this my central issue. I talk about this stuff all the time, whereas my opponent, she recently posted something on her Facebook that said, like, okay, let's talk about homelessness. And it's like, okay, that's about 60 days coming up to the election. I'm looking at her social media, and for the last 4 years, she hasn't said anything about it. It's been a bunch of posts about like flower arrangements and stuff, and they're beautiful flowers and everything. But I mean, you know, where have you been for the last 4 years on this? I'm kind of curious as to what inspired her to finally post about it. Maybe it has something to do with my campaign and the fact that a lot of people on the left are agreeing with me, because I make the case, like, again, shelter space, number one priority. And I can sell this to my conservative friends. It's like, number one, it's the moral thing to do. And number two, there's an economic investment to be said for this. When we finally start to clean up this problem and help these people, more people are going to go downtown. New businesses will come in. There's Salem can be an economic powerhouse once we finally solve this problem. So at the doors, when I knock, the first thing I say is, I'm one of your neighbors. I'm running for Salem City Council, and I want to help to solve the homelessness crisis. And their face lights up right away because everyone is in agreement that this is the number one problem.
Especially in Ward 2. Yeah. Because that's downtown.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we have it in a lot of different areas of Ward 2. Everyone feels strongly about this issue. And once we actually start having the conversation, they're generally in agreement. The thing that I have to combat against is that there's elements of my opposition that paints me as this like cold, heartless, right-wing extremist that wants to go around jailing all the homeless people. But once they actually see what I'm actually saying, they're largely in agreement. And I've even gotten a lot of liberals and progressives to endorse my campaign and say that they're going to vote for me. A couple of them have had the courage to say so publicly and have been met with some of that bullying that happens online. But
not kindness and tolerance?
Definitely not kindness and compassion. But that's what they're starting to realize on the opposition is like those tactics are not working anymore. Yeah. It's like my campaign is the personification, the symbol of us being allowed to talk about this now. And you see the tone shifting in the city council meetings as well. They were just talking about drug enforcement at the last meeting. It's like for a while, they haven't even wanted to touch the addiction issue and would basically criticize you if you dared to talk about it, but they're finally having to address this. So overall, I would say on the ground, it's been overwhelming support, except for people that have just been completely shut down and picked aside and don't actually want to hear anything that I have to say. They've already made up their minds because they see it as a left versus right kind of thing.
So. Which is unfortunate because it affects everybody. And, you know, what's been going on right now clearly isn't working because it does seem to be getting worse. I was actually seeing some spots in Salem that I thought, you know, that there was no issue there. And the last time I drove by, it's like, and now there is. And so it's not necessarily getting better. And it seems to have been, let's throw money at it. That doesn't always work. You've got to be able, like you said, to name the problem and then dig deeper and have those conversations and bring more voices to the table like yours.
Absolutely. And I did a ride along not too long ago in Wallace Marine Park. And that is jaw-dropping what has happened in there. And it really makes me sick. It pisses me off that in the last several months at city council, they don't even talk about Wallace Marine Park. That's the largest homeless encampment in the entire state.
In Oregon. One mile from the Capitol.
People have died in there. There is sex trafficking happening in there. It is a very dark place. And I went in there with the police, and it was just jaw-dropping. Like millions of pounds of trash. I mean, this is a perfect example of city council and the way our priorities are upside down. They'll go on and on about like a new development, whether or not it can go up because like a tree is going to be cut down or something. They're so concerned about the environmental factors of things. Like you're so concerned about the environment that you're not going to allow this development to happen because some trees or something. But meanwhile, in Wallace Marine Park, there's million pounds of trash and people dying and disease spreading. It's like, and you're environmentalist. Give me a break. It's such a sham. People are so sick and tired of it. And my campaign is reflecting that. And that's why we have the energy that we do. People have had it. We're sick and tired of being bullied into silence about it. And we demand an actual solution to these problems. And we're not going to settle for anything less.
And I think that's what it's going to take is to keep the pressure on and do that. Now, you talk about the environmental aspect of things. You look at all that garbage. All you have to do if you really want to know, because the videos are out there. We talk about Kevin Dahlgren all the time. The videos are there. He has toured through there many times. Many people have toured. You have to willfully not want to know at this point.
Right. Yeah. And I tell people all the time that the hardest part of recovering from alcoholism was not giving up alcohol. The most difficult part was having to look in the mirror face to face with myself and admit how badly I had screwed up my life. That's where we are as a city. It's either time. I tell people all the time, you'll never hear me say that what I'm talking about is going to be easy because it's not. Mm-hmm. You've got two options just like I did when I was dying from alcoholism. Either you continue the slow death of alcoholism alcoholism and die a pathetic, lonely death, or you look in the mirror, realize what the truth is, accept it, and take the hard, long road of recovery that's going to take years, but you do recover, and then you end up having a life beyond your wildest dreams. Those are our two options, okay? Either die the slow death of addiction, or you take the long, hard look in the mirror. And right now, we are forcing the city to finally have to look in the mirror and address this issue. And they're kind of kicking and screaming about it, but we are making them do it.
And it sounds like that's really resonating with your constituents and your neighbors when you talk about that they're kind of ready for it too. Like you said, people
Absolutely.
Are just done with this.
Yes, they are.
And the euphemisms and throwing money at it aren't cutting it anymore. And people see through it.
Nope.
They really do.
They do.
So you're knocking on doors. Do you do any events like people, you know, want to come out and meet? You don't have to live in your ward to support you if you like the messaging. Yeah.
The Salem Reporter is doing a quasi debate kind of thing on Tuesday coming up at the Elsinore Theater, actually. And that'll be interesting. Excellent. That'll be all eight candidates up there simultaneously. So that's worth looking into.
That's going to be must-see TV.
Yeah. The Salem Chamber of Commerce is doing a debate on April 12th or 13th or whatever that Monday is. And that'll be the first time that I get to like really go back and forth with my opponent, who, again, I think seems like a nice enough lady, you know. But it's like, we need someone in there that is going to take bold action and is not afraid to say the difficult things and is certainly not going to cow in fear to the activist bullies that are out there that have been controlling everything. That's got to stop immediately.
All right. We're just about out of time with you, Manny. What's your website for people to go check you out?
Mannyforsalem.com.
And you're all over social media. You're posting your testimony is out there. I know on that website you've got video of your testimony as well for people who want to learn more about that. All right, Manny. Well, we'll keep in touch. Like you said, there's debates coming up so people can learn more about that. We appreciate you taking the time. And we are just about out of time. I'm getting the signal. We're going to hear the music coming up any minute.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Betcha. You betcha. Here we come. Here comes the music, Denise. Give us an outro.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. Okay. We're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Come on back.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
All right, welcome back, everybody. So, yeah, that kind of prompted our conversation off air, Hunter, because you see the level where you live in your neighborhood and your ward. You see this homelessness and you see... Yeah. You know, the fallout of it all.
I mean, I am on Lancaster Drive probably daily, Silverton Road daily, and you see the person sleeping in a parking lot under a tree. You see them sleeping under overhangs or in the doorways of the businesses. You see the panhandlers out at every major intersection, frightening the gajibas out of drivers because sometimes they just kind of step out into the road. And I'm just sitting here going... We can't continue this way. And I go back and, you know, growing up in the greater Seattle area, you knew homelessness was out there, but it was really, there were just certain parts where if you wanted to go find it, easy to find, but if you didn't want to partake in it, you just didn't go to those communities, you know, those areas where, you know, there was bigger homeless problems. It has expanded so much in the last 5 to 10 years in Oregon and Salem in particular, where if you leave your home, you are seeing a part of the homeless
problem.
It's in
every neighborhood, every part of town. Like I said, when I was driving by, it's that area by where the old Costco was. There's that big open area just off the freeway. And it was like fenced off and nothing was there. And it was like, man, that seems like crime or real estate. And I drove by it recently and it's there too.
Well, yeah.
And there is nothing compassionate or kind or loving about letting people slowly die on the street.
No, and
there just isn't.
I've been through it at a personal level a couple of years ago. I had a cousin with some severe mental health issues, in and out of rehabs, in and out of controlled environments, till finally one day she walked away from a rehab facility and she was found a couple of weeks later deceased at a homeless camp. Wow. And I just sit here and, I mean, it was in Southern California, but that's a story that's all too common and shouldn't be this common.
Sadly, yeah. You're absolutely right. And so, you know, Salemites, Oregonians, Oregon voters have a chance really to make a change. I've been, you know, kind of out again on social media doing show prep, coming across some things. There's a lot of problems that need to be solved. And one of the best ways you have as a citizen is to vote. And, you know, hearing, I guess, at the last ORP meeting, somebody gave a presentation and really broke down the numbers. Republicans are not voting in Oregon. Mm-hmm. That's a big problem. So it isn't necessarily vote by mail or motor voter. It's Republicans aren't voting. And I forget the guy's name, and I'll get it because I want to invite him on the show. The numbers are pretty bad. So a lot of this can be solved. I know we're, you know, Democrats outnumber, but the NAVs, kind of like pick a side maybe this time.
Well,
what do you think? What do you think?
Like Manny said, this is an issue, much like the SAVE Act, that crosses both sides of the aisle. You know, a liberal voter, a conservative voter, you are not able to avoid the homeless drug addiction issue
right. That
you can see with your own eyes on a daily basis. And I just sit here and go, let's start with the simple first steps. Let's agree that this is a problem.
Yes,
and the current way, the way that the status quo of handling the homeless challenges of Salem in particular have not been working. So why not open our minds and be willing to accept that there may be a better way out there, and there's people that have experienced it, that have been through it, that they need that seat at the table to kind of sit there and say, here's what got me out of this scenario. Here's what got people I know out of this situation. We need to stop handing it off to the people that have never, you know, that would prefer to live behind a gate and never see this scenario, to handle a problem that they can't understand and can't even engage in.
Right. And Oregon is listed as one of the least affordable. It's one of the highest tax states. Everything is high. So people are, you know, working hard. Quality of life has gone down. You've got crime rates are up. All of these things are kind of go hand in hand. There's a K2 story. Oregon ranks fifth least affordable state. So you've got the frustration of that. Even if you want to go out and enjoy a dinner or something downtown, it's really expensive to go do it. You don't know what you're going to be coming up with as far as mental illness, addiction, crime, all that on the streets. It doesn't make you feel very safe in your city. Oregon also has among the highest stress levels in the United States. Does not surprise me at all. I think that's probably the same for Washington and California as well. But in Oregon, you essentials cost households $18,300 more annually. That's a lot of money.
Yeah. And you take this right back. Like we said, and Manny said it himself, there's a lot of people that are out there circumstantially, lost a job, health emergency, all these things. And I go, and those are the people, in my experience, those are the ones that want the help. They want to get into a shelter.
Right.
They want to get into whatever programs they can get them out of that scenario. And I'm sitting here going, when I saw these numbers, I am just sitting here going, how can people not vote against what's currently been going on here in the state of Oregon? And at the local level, it's like they've got their hands out for more and more of your money every time you turn around. But yet everything we do is getting more and more expensive.
Exactly.
And more and more stress ridden. And I'm sitting here going, it sucks living, you know, paycheck to paycheck, wondering if you could pay your own bills, let alone all the other bills you get to pay with the handouts.
Right. And then you've got municipal governments and state governments and everybody else wanting to tax more and more to supposedly fix the problems that we're all seeing, and they don't get fixed yet. You're taxed more and more. Here's a breakdown, because people are just like he was saying, they've had it. Mm-hmm. Enough of this. They're seeing through it all. The report broke down Oregon's cost increases. So this is just to live.
Mm-hmm.
Shelter and utilities is up by $5,904. Child care up $7,530. Groceries are up by $3,204. Car insurance up $947. Gas, $488. And health insurance, oof, don't get me started on that, is up $180. So that's just your basic, as a citizen working hard, family in Oregon, that's just to take care of you. And so now you've got all this other stuff on top that you're not even allowed to talk about, because you get called names and everything else. I mean, no wonder the stress is so high.
Well, I just sit there and go, let's look at it this way. The average Oregon citizen here in Salem, you know, living for the most part paycheck to paycheck, having to pay all of these massive bills to survive day in and day out. Let's say you scrimp and save to buy your child that nice, fun new bike or something else. And it gets left out in the front yard one night, and all of a sudden it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, your child is heartbroken. You're heartbroken. You worked and saved and did everything you can to get this amazing gift for your kid. It has just been walked off because, you know, somebody probably ends up down at Wallace Marine Park and taken apart into pieces. I mean, I'm just sitting here going, the petty crime follows the things that, that we see happening every day. You
know? And the and what, you know, the if you put it out there, the shaming, well, it's just property. It's not people, you know, people over profits or whatever. Or you've got insurance, that'll cover it. Well, that doesn't ring true. And I think the shaming and people being afraid to say anything is, I think that time is past. People have had it. But the other side of it is you've got the numbers that really do show that Republicans are not voting. You're not going to change anything if you're not, if you don't get new people in there that are going to bring new ideas, new policies, new, and granted, you're not going to change it overnight. None of this is, oh, hey, we all won. We got a new Republican governor. Everything's yay, sunshine and ponies. And no, it's going to take a long time. But I like what he said about getting in there and really understanding that you've got to take that hard look and you've got to be able to name the problem, and then you can start solving it. And it is very hard work. We're very comfortable in this country. Things have been pretty cushy. We don't like to do the hard work, but looking away, not looking at it and hoping it would go away or fix itself is not a strategy because it doesn't work.
Yeah, well, and I think we've reached a point where not engaging and not involving yourself in especially this May primary, where the direction of our city is on the line, as well as potentially a massive gas tax, which will literally cripple the economy of this city come, you know, May. And I'm just going, now is the time that, that the lack of engagement excuses have kind of run their path.
Yeah. I just don't do politics. Oh, stop it.
It's not politics
now.
Or
I'm too busy or I have to work. Well, okay.
I'm just going to sit here and say, if this gas tax comes to reality, it's no longer politics, it's economics.
Yeah. And then, you know, you may have the exodus out of the West Coast states, the cow states, which is very offensive, was politically maybe motivated, ideologically motivated. Pretty soon you're going to have economic refugees. So, hey, red states, pay attention.
Yeah, that's right.
Because that's different. So let's just shift gears real quick before we take a break. The governor's race. So we're talking about that. You know, you've got, I don't know. There's five candidates. That's what I'm saying. There's five. Other ones, whatever.
I
don't even know their names.
Well, I'm okay at this point that even in publications and articles and things like that, I'm only seeing a maximum of six being named. And
who's
five
the
of them, the Dyack is the sixth one. He'll get mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
But a lot of times it's just the primary five with occasionally a sixth one thrown in. And I'm glad that our media is actually covering it that way.
Not 19. It was 19 in 2022. It is higher. There are people that have filed.
Yeah, it's 15, you know. I think, this year.
Let's look at it from a fundraising standpoint, then. That's how I'm making it. It's like, are you raising any money? Then, okay. Dudley Andreessen dominate early fundraising in the GOP primary, which is not surprising. Rounding it out, Ed Deal comes in around third, and then Marion County Commissioner Daniel Bethel and conservative YouTuber David Medina. So we're looking at some numbers here. Chris Dudley leads the field, which is not surprising. He's former NBA.
Well, and we found
he's super
out.
Tall. And people like him. He ran once again. He came the closest any Republican had in ages.
Well, and I think it was announced like a week ago that he got a large donation from Phil Knight. So
he did. So he's got
that always helps.
$1.85 million in total contributions. He's got an ending cash balance of roughly $1.5 million. So he's right up there. Christine Drazen, former House Republican leader, she's reportedly at $904,000 and change in total contributions. The strongest overall cash position is approximately $1.48 million. Again, you've got to be to run. You've got to be in the millions. You just have to. Mm-hmm. Money is the mother's milk of politics. You got to buy ads. You got it's name recognition and money. State Rep. Ed Deal sits a distant third. And again, this is credit to rightnoworegon.com. This is an Orstar search. I'm an Orstar geek, and I'll go out there and do that. He's at a distant third tier, raising $211,000 and change with $140,000 cash on hand. And then rounding out is, again, Marion County Commissioner Danielle Bethel. She's raised just under $30,000. I thought she had a big donation in there from a timber guy, but so she's got $20,900 remaining. And then YouTuber Medina is at $38,555 with a $20,000 loan and about $5,000 in cash. The other one, Kyle Duyke. Oh, I don't know how to say his name. He's raised $3,600. I would not even include him on the list, frankly, just based on that. Yeah. He has no money. Yeah. He has no money.
Yeah, and the rest of the unnamed list is below that. So yeah. So those are the five primary candidates running for governor this year.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, from the money perspective and name recognition, it really is Dudley and Drazen. I got a deal up there because of the no tax referendum. Mm-hmm. But in comparison to the numbers we just laid out for Dudley and Drazen, incumbent Governor Tina Kotax, she's got over 2 million. So, yeah.
Yeah. And that's going to be the challenge. And you hope and pray that whoever comes out of the May primary as the candidate for the Republican Party, they can convalesce both financially and vote-wise behind that candidate, because that needs to happen.
I really would love to see strategy looking at who really kind of making your primary vote about who is the most electable in Oregon. I don't necessarily know that you could have a super hardcore conservative win in Oregon, but there are issues. That's why the no tax thing is a really good, strong issue to run on, because that hit everybody and everybody was ticked off about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if we're going to, we got a couple months left before the primary, right?
Yeah, we're just under 2 months until the primary.
So a lot can happen. Mm-hmm. A lot can happen. But as it looks right now, based on money, name recognition, getting out there, it is Dudley and Drazen. I don't know what other, I know there was that first debate that the Coos County Republicans put on. Hopefully the next one will have all five of them there. And frankly, you and I've talked about this, having moderated a debate in 2022, I don't want to see 19 candidates on a stage.
No.
I just don't. It doesn't do anything for the electorate. It's not edifying for anybody to hear what somebody who has no money in their account has to say about anything, frankly.
Well, and
run for another office, dude.
Yeah, and even as the 2022 cycle progressed, they started using some certain qualifiers, which took out some of the top candidates and included some of the lower ones. I'm sitting there going, this is fairly straightforward. This is fairly legit. I mean, you're looking at, there's only five candidates that have raised over $30,000. Let's talk to those five candidates, because those are the only ones that have that realistic shot
of
creating
a
movement
line
behind them.
I agree. Okay, let's go ahead and take our last break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on the air on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Salem Clinic Urgent Care and Cozy's New York Deli.
Okay, so we were talking about kind of, the numbers in Oregon for Republicans voting is, pretty bad, pretty abysmal. Mm-hmm. Pulling out the lens a little bit, going more national. Scott Pressler, we've had him on the show. The guy, his handle on X is the persistence. The dude is everywhere. He started out by, going in and cleaning up cities. He tweeted out, I think today, sometimes I wonder why I do this work. I wonder why I work so hard to elect Republican majorities into office. And then when we are in power, our very elected officials don't wield or harness that power. It's a longer, he's talking about he loses sleep. There are a lot of people, this guy is, more well known for this, but even in Oregon, even in Salem, there are people that are out there doing that. They're running for office. They're doing it. They get in. There are people that are putting these candidates in only to find out when we get in there and we have the power, it's not wielded. This, again, he's talking about the SAVE Act and what's happening at the national level, which is driving me crazy. I'm so tired of this. We put you in there for a reason and you're not doing your job. What good are you? And so that's where you need to be politically engaged. Primary these people. Get them out. So there's a chance to make some change in Oregon doing that just as well. The other one is that we all follow James O'Keefe and his stings, and he goes out there literally risking life and limb, and he's handing these people over to DOJ and then nothing.
Crickets.
If we start burning out the O'Keefes and the Presslers, warning bell, red fire alarm.
Yeah, and I just sit here and I go, and that's the problem. There's people out there doing the legwork, putting in the hard time. The most common excuse, I got all these other things going on, I just don't have the time.
I'm
sitting here kind of going, but there's people doing it. And when they're getting these people elected and they have the ability to fulfill their campaign promises and make a difference and send us in a positive direction, they're not taking advantage of doing that. And if that's burning out these people, I struggle to sit here and go, because if we get Republican turnout in the next national election, similar to what Oregon's Republican turnout is it's done. It's over with. And I'm sitting there going, you know, fortify your mountain fortress because that's going to be as good as it gets.
Right. And if Republicans have 85% of Republicans want this, a high majority of Democrats want this SAVE Act, just kind of tacking over to the national, and Republicans control all three and they can't get it done, they won't. And that's the thing. They won't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's pissing off a lot of people, and enough is enough. And so, again, when you're burning out a Scott Pressler, when you are burning out a James O'Keefe, who I really hadn't seen get that worked up about this, he was on Benny Johnson, and when he's out there literally risking life and limb, I've watched his videos. He's been doing this for a very, very long. I remember him from back in the Acorn mm-hmm. days with Hannah Giles and the pimp and the, you know, going, I mean, gosh, they've been out there for a very long time. We all love to share and talk about their stuff, but they're out there doing it. They are risking life and limb. And so when you've got people in the power that we have put in, that we have elected, that won't do anything about it, I can kind of see why there's some apathy out there. So that's got to change.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, if Scott Pressler is getting burned out on encouraging people to vote because the people that he encourages people to vote for aren't fulfilling their duties, I'm just sitting here going, how can you expect the average person to get excited about a candidate and want to go out there and vote? We're told these are the candidates that we need to elect in order to make a difference and make some changes and bring, you know, structure and the ability to believe wholeheartedly in our elections. And they're not doing that job. And I just sit here and go, yeah, we can talk about primarying them again, but what good is that going to do at the end of the day?
I don't know. And a lot of people will look to the party system. I was just trying to think. Somebody was like, Scott Pressler should be head of the GOP. I don't even remember the name of who's at the head of the GOP.
I forget.
And I should know that. And it's not coming to mind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can even, you know, over into Oregon, the county parties are doing a lot of work. But there's so much opportunity here to engage and to educate and to get people to step up, to run for these seats, to actually make real, real change. But you cannot... See, after a while, people start seeing nothing or no accountability. It's like what's happening with all the daycares and the leering centers. Where's the prosecutions? Where?
Yeah. I've said it since COVID. You know, the only way you are going to convince the mass public that people are going to be held accountable for the things that they do wrong at a government level is if you actually start putting them in handcuffs and putting them on display for the American public to see and say, this can never happen again, and the people responsible for it are going to pay the consequences. Because as long as you sit there and go, there's really no consequences to, you know, insider stock trading from our government, well, they're going to keep doing it.
Yeah, no consequences for Fauci, that rat, for Deborah Birx, for all the lies that were told, for, you know, all of the shaming and the firing and the all of it. Nothing. It's been memory hold. And they're going to do it again, and you're going to have the same people falling for it again. So I do get the frustration. I really very much do. I think it's important to go out and to support people that are running for office that do step up to do that, to go on and support them, to financially support them, to knock on doors for them, to certainly, at the very least, vote for them.
Yeah. And you got to, you know, uplift those people and get behind them. And then you hope and you pray that the people that you're working so hard to elect fulfill the duty they were elected to do and represent
the
people.
And before that, that's a two-way relationship because you got to show up and let them know what your priorities are and what you want. The other side always does.
Mm-hmm.
So take a day off, take a vacation day, get a babysitter and do it.
Or heck, just go on and send an email or leave a voice message. Things that can take you 10 minutes max.
10 seconds. And that matter.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if they don't know what you want, I think at the SAVE Act they know, but they're not going to act on those things they don't know.
All right. That's it for us, everybody. We're going to talk to Ben Fisher, who's running for award, HD18 tomorrow. So come on. We'll see you tomorrow.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.